Audio version of Michael Leitman's blog. September 5th, 2019. Authentic Kabbalah course in New York and Toronto starting Tuesday, September 10th, 2019. Hello to anyone who knows me in some form, perhaps through my articles or interviews, or my posts or videos online. As far as I can remember, I was always interested in knowing the secret of life, the goal of life, the universe, why was it created, what human beings are for. I was very occupied with that. I went to study biocybernetics, the operating systems of the human body. It didn't really answer what I wanted to know. And then I came to the wisdom of Kabbalah. So if you're interested in knowing the sources of wisdom that I learn from, I'm inviting you. You'll see how much happiness it can add to your life. We have designed a course that is suitable for everyone. It's very easy and accessible. When you start, you'll see how the most complex things can be made extremely simple. You'll get step-by-step guidance by dedicated instructors. And to be honest, I envy you. It was very difficult for me to attain this wisdom, and I'm so happy that now I can pass it on easily and beautifully, so enjoy it. Super glue to adhere to the Creator. If somebody interferes with me, then I should accept this as help from the opposite, which shows me where I have not yet cleaved to the Creator. Due to this interference, I get closer to the Creator, and therefore, I wish this person all the best, blessing for the bad as for the good. After all, it is due to these interferences that I have the opportunity to rise to the Creator each time. Without them, I would be unable to advance. Therefore, on one hand, in corporeal life I must defend myself and fight against such interferences. But in essence, in my internal work, I fully accept them and thank for everything bad as good. It is such interferences that bring us correction, although they cost us a lot of effort, money, and time. The main thing is to relate to them correctly, that is, to launch a war against them in order to ask for adhesion with the Creator above them. I understand that the Creator sent me these obstacles and I want to cleave to Him along with them. After all, my devotion to the Creator is verified by the force with which I cleave to Him. Let's say, there is a load weighing 5 kilograms that I want to attach to the ceiling. To do this, I need glue that holds at least 5 kilograms and a little more, to be on the safe side. Therefore, I evaluate the strength of the glue by the weight of the load. If I stick the load and it falls, then the glue is weaker than the weight of the load, that is, my devotion to the Creator is less than the interference that He sent. But if I ask the Creator to help me cleave to Him with a force greater than the interference and I cling to the ceiling with this whole problem, then I gain faith above reason, the force of adhesion, which is stronger than the interference felt within reason. The glue I receive from the Creator is the light that comes to me at my request, the power of bestowal, Bina, with which I cling to the Creator in bestowal to Him. I want to cling to Him above this interference that pushes me away from Him so that all crimes will be covered by the love for the Creator. But there is no righteous person who did not previously sin. We always fall, locking ourselves on the obstacle itself, on a person who is causing us problems or on the situations. We are never ready for an obstacle because each time it is new, a new Reshima from the shattering is revealed. We are forced to fall and succumb to deception as if the problem did not come from the Creator. But already in the next moment, we need to return to the correct perception. This is called the pinch of the devil, a light pinch is enough to recover. First, I cry out, ouch, feeling the interference, and the second ouch already comes from the realization that this is not interference but the Creator who draws me to Himself. It all takes place in one go. The only answer to every obstacle is to cling to the Creator even more. From the first part of the daily Kabbalah lesson, the 24th of August 2019, there is none else besides Him. The Times of Israel published my new article, How Did New York Become a Battleground for Jews? Why are Jews being assaulted in a way they were assaulted in pre-Nazi Germany? Asks former NY State Assemblyman, Dov Hiking in a heartfelt tweet to NYC Mayor, Bill de Blasio, urging him to address the out-of-control anti-Semitism in NY. He added, enough is enough. In fact, three extremely violent attacks on Orthodox men in Brooklyn in less than a week speaks volumes about a vicious pattern of hate crimes being tracked by the police. 145 cases this year, mostly anti-Semitic incidents, nearly double the number reported in 2018. This demands an urgent address, and first of all by us, Jews. What do haters want from us? Are we really willing to accept this as the new norm? We are going to need some strong glue to make our fractured Jewish collective whole again, not only to prevail over the hatred, but even in order to survive. The victims of this vicious spike in hate crimes have been people easily identifiable as Jews living in traditional Jewish neighborhoods, but history has shown us that hatred does not distinguish between religious denominations or residential areas. Jews around the world are being targeted and attacked only because they are Jews, so no one should feel exempt. Therefore, we must respond as one unified people. So why is it that this alarming situation is no big deal to many Jews then? When an attack on one isn't felt as an attack on all, it exemplifies how deeply divided we are as a Jewish people. The lack of empathy and identification as one people is the cause of hatred against us. Our dissociated separation weakens our very foundation as a people, making us easy prey. In the most recent attack against Jews in New York, a Hasidic man was beaten in the face with a belt in front of a synagogue in Brooklyn. Authorities are also investigating two other similar cases in the last few days. In Crown Heights, according to the NIPT, an assailant bashed a rabbi in the face with a heavy paving stone, breaking his nose and knocking out some teeth. In another incident in the same neighborhood, an Orthodox Jewish man suffered an eye injury after being attacked with ice by a group of aggressors. If we consider that typically only a small percentage of crimes are ever reported, yet those already counted reveal a startling increase in the numbers of hate crimes. In other words, this is just the tip of the iceberg. Many in the Jewish community have stopped referring to these as random cases, now referring to them as mainstream anti-Semitism. Just how much Jewish blood must be spilled before we react? What do haters want from us? Throughout history, the hatred of the nations toward the Jews has risen and has fallen. Therefore, many have researched the phenomenon of anti-Semitism, although no one has identified its fundamental cause and how to eliminate it. And its quick intensification today once again testifies to the fact that the antidote to anti-Semitism is still not being applied. Only the wisdom of Kabbalah explains the core reason for anti-Semitism and its fluctuation throughout history. Kabbalah states that curbing anti-Semitic sentiments is solely dependent upon the Jewish people, to the extent that the Jews come closer to their spiritual root, as a united people, under the dictum love your friend as yourself, who radiate a shining example of unity to the world, as a light unto nations' anti-Semitism lessens. This is true because when Jews become unified as one, a magnetic positive field is created covering the entire world. Conversely, the more distant Jews become from their root, anti-Semitism rises, forcing us to unite through the mounting pressure of anti-Semitism, ranging from frequent violent attacks to extreme existential threats like was seen in pogroms and the Holocaust. The glue that binds us together against anti-Semitism. At this point, you might be asking, how we can possibly reverse our current separation and repulsion since it's known that we are intrinsically the most opinionated of all people. There is a popular saying, two Jews, three opinions. Aware of our nature as a people, from the beginning our sages already established the method to deal with the challenge of rising above our inevitable disagreements. The book Likud Etzot, Assorted Counsels, specifies how we should relate to those with whom we disagree. The essence of peace is to connect to opposites. Hence, do not be alarmed if you see a person whose view is the complete opposite of yours and you think that you will never be able to make peace with him. Also, when you see two people who are completely opposite to one another, do not say that it is impossible to make peace between them. On the contrary, the essence of peace is to try to make peace above two opposites. Indeed, only if we contribute our uniqueness to humanity, will our unity grow and our sense of confidence and happiness increase. Our lives are meaningful only when we contribute to society. With this mindset of uniting above our differences and in order to contribute our skills to the creation of a vibrant humanity from which all profit, everyone will find fulfillment and purpose in their lives and in all their actions. This is the juncture at which aggressions will cease and balance will be re-established in society. Michael Leitman, on Quora: Are the Immers and Fires a problem for the entire Earth? We need to see the whole of nature as an integral system. That is, there is a current focus on the Immers and Fires, but there is an entanglement of environmental problems including ocean and air pollution, ozone depletion, outbreaks of natural disasters from volcanic eruptions through to earthquakes and hurricanes, not mentioning many others, and they are all influenced by the person, who according to the wisdom of Kabbalah, is a small world. Therefore, when we reach states where we become internally organized, that is, when our attitudes to each other become balanced and positive, then we will also experience positive phenomena from the outside, that is from nature. We do not cause environmental problems with our hands. We cause them with our lack of inner correction. By letting our divisive egoistic drives cause us to harm each other, we invite upon us a negative response from nature. Also, the more we develop without correcting our attitudes to each other, the more we will draw to ourselves increasingly severe reactions from nature. The time has come for us to reach connection among all people as in an integral system. We witness mammoth scale problems in nature, and we're unaware of how we cause such phenomena from the point of our attitudes to each other. Many people, world leaders among them, think that by implementing actions toward nature, like cleaning garbage from the oceans, lessening air pollution or reducing the use of fossil fuels, we will have some kind of positive impact on nature. However, it's not the case. Politicians especially only use such pleasant rhetoric for the purpose of their own self-promotion. Nothing we do outside of changing our attitudes to each other will help us. Moreover, the more efforts we apply to fix things externally without undergoing an inner change, the more harm we will bring about. Why? It is because the world would continue developing by not dealing with the cause of all these problems, that we need to correct ourselves by upgrading our attitudes to each other, from egoistic to altruistic, divided to connected, and self-centered benefit to benefiting the whole of humanity. By doing so, we will see a positive response back to us from nature. The inner change of our attitudes to each other is what nature demands of us. Note that according to the wisdom of Kabbalah, nature and God are synonymous, they share the same number in Gematria, the Kabbalistic number system. We need to become integral in our awareness, to understand the system we're in, the need to resemble the system of nature, and adapt ourselves to it. Through our adaptation to nature, nature would calm down and become balanced. Complementarity and wholeness would abound on all of nature's levels, still, vegetative, animate and human, and we would experience harmony and perfection as a result. Uniqueness of the Creator, Part 9. What is the influence of the upper light? Question. In the article Introduction to the Study of the Ten Sephirot, item 155, Baal-Hasulam describes how the upper light works. He says that Kabbalists obligated each person to study the wisdom of Kabbalah only in order to attract upon ourselves this light that changes us. What is the influence of the light? How can I feel this transformation on myself and into whom can I turn? Answer, you can feel the influence of the light on yourself, in your personal changes and personal qualities, such as desires, intentions, qualities, in the more clearly depicted purpose of development. Question, am I becoming more moral? Answer, maybe not. However, you increasingly understand what is going on. You might not yet be changing, but if you are studying the wisdom of Kabbalah, the upper light is already affecting you and preparing you to want change. Question, does it mean that the upper light is not the creator yet? There is the creator and there is the upper light, right? Answer, no, there is only one force, but we call it different names according to the way it manifests itself. We call the upper intention the creator, and we call his influence upon us the light. From Cab TV's Basics of Kabbalah, December 10, 2018. New Hash Life 1141. Education for Peace.
Hello and thanks for being with us on the New Leaf Show with Dr. Michael Lightman. Hello, Dr. Lightman. Hello, everyone. Hello, Nitza Mazoz.
Hello.
And today we'd like to talk about education for peace. We experience different kinds of struggles between us and different parts in society and other countries, and we'd like to see how can we shift the scale a bit from the direction of war and struggle in the direction of peace and harmony. Be with us. It's up, please. Now, in every society, beyond people being a part of society, they'll usually feel that they identify with a certain group in society. It could be a group on the socioeconomical level, it could be an ethnic group, a group that represents a certain culture, it could be many things. Now, a person feels that he belongs to this group, and whether he's aware of it or not, but there's a certain narrative around the group, something that causes him to identify with it emotionally, intellectually. And we know that in every society, there are always such groups. And one of the biggest challenges is to see how do we create a correct process that connects everyone, that creates some kind of a peace process between different groups. Now, usually the reason for the differences is, suppose if we're talking between countries, then it's about territory or resources. If it's within a country, it could be an ideological thing. Another thing that's usually added to this is that one of the groups usually feels that they're not equal, that maybe they're even suppressed. And all of these elements create many, many groups in society. And our challenge today is to talk about a process that's called education for peace. How, from a society that consists of many groups, each having their own thoughts, interests, story, and so on, how do we create some one thing out of all of this? So maybe we can begin with the first question. That is, when we want to begin such a process, are there certain preconditions that have to be met so that such a process of education for peace can exist? I never saw something like that. As much as I've researched history, I read, I heard, I never felt or ever saw that there is such a thing called peace. It's a kind of illusion, fairy tale, imagination. I don't know what peace is. It's like kids saying, let's make peace forever and never fight. Until next time. Yeah, and in a few minutes, again. So, all in all, from our experience of our thousands of years of development as a mankind, where we already know and understand what's going on in history, so we see that probably it's something unrealistic. Meaning, the more we study peace, the more we'll learn about war. And we see that, besides in some nice faculty in a university that teaches these delusional things to people with a vivid imagination, meaning that they have a certain desire to educate for peace. Yeah, it's not even education. They just learn that this thing might be good. Mankind dreams about it. But along with it, there are different faculties for diplomacy, for different other things that what peace. It's all about how to kill, choke, and do something to the other that they won't get up. Meaning, peace isn't a kind of peace where there's no war, because this is impossible. A state of no war is impossible, because shalom, in Hebrew, peace, comes from the word shlemut, wholeness and perfection. That if we want to achieve perfection and wholeness, then our way to it is called peace. And this could include our understanding and recognition of our past, or our current state. It could be a truce, different kinds of agreements, but for sure, we would like to advance toward a whole and complete state. A whole and complete state is where different opposites complete each other. Complete. In a way that one cannot be without the other. As simple as that. And on purpose, they're trying to build between them such systems that they'll need each other, because they can't exist without each other. Then, and only then, will they be able to reach a kind of connection called peace. So this is a critical point. You're saying that if there's a certain aspiration for peace, because we imagine that maybe we'll sit and talk and we won't fight anymore and there will be no disputes, won't happen. Forget about it, unrealistic. It's just talk. It's good that we do it. Maybe in the meantime that we're talking, we won't start a war. It prevents violence. Maybe. But actually, really going into a process of educating for peace is first of all the understanding that peace is something that's made between opposites. And this is something that will not disappear. The differences, the oppositeness, it will only go and grow. Because if we're distant neighbors, then it's not that bad. But if we start coming closer to each other, there's friction. Yeah. The oppositeness and contrasts that you reveal and everything becomes more acute. Meaning, the basic assumption is that what? The assumption is that life can exist only in completion between opposites. Where? Each person discovers that which exists in the other, and actually the opposite things that you discover in someone else, you need them and you can't do without them. Okay, now, this is an interesting point. Meaning, I'm not going to find something or someone that's really similar to me. You're not looking for similar things. No. If I'm capable of it, if I really want to reach true peace. And true peace is really worthwhile for me, because then I connect to myself all the opposites. I don't leave them outside of myself as my haters and enemies, but I connect them to myself and turn them into my friends, into an inseparable part of myself. Then by that I become strong and complete. And then it's worthwhile. But for this you have to work a lot. And the main thing is to raise the intellect above your feelings. Okay, so this leads me to my next question. I understand that the basic assumption is that we're opposite, different, and this is something that we don't have to change. It's something that you can change. This is what we get from nature. Okay, this is a fact. And therefore, we're different altogether. This is why there is person and another person and so on. And with this basic assumption comes a feeling that says, one group feels that it's lesser. The feeling is simple. I love myself, and someone who's not like me, to the extent to which he's different than I am, I hate him. I reject him, move away from him. In short, to the extent to which we're different, I hate the other. So, after we understand the basic assumption, the second basic assumption that we have to talk about is that you're different shouldn't frighten you, because the differences between you, the fact that the other is different, naturally, this causes you to feel something toward the other group, the other person, maybe even a kind of hate in extreme conditions. But what do you do with feelings like discrimination, deprivation? How do you not allow that to stand in the way of the peace process? Education. We have to educate both sides. There has to be a third party. There has to be a third factor, really. Of course, because if they hate each other, then you have to correct the one and the other. None of them is right or perfect. And therefore, meaning it's possible that one of them is almost good and the other is almost entirely bad. But the one side that hates the other side, are they right in hating the other side? Maybe. They're right. But the other, he's also doing something wrong because he evokes this feeling in the other. Meaning, the one side feels that they're fine, but maybe they're 100% good besides one thing, that by their behavior, they cause the bad side, they awaken in them a bad feeling. Then that's already wrong. And this, their partners, and this feeling of suppression or any other kind of bad feeling that exists even in one group, in the same group, actually everyone is, so to speak, to blame for it. Now, you said that there has to be a third factor, which isn't one of the two groups, this third factor. Who or what is it? The third factor is the coordinator that has to be accepted by both sides, and that has the strength to bring them closer, to intervene, that they accept them as a higher authority, even though that it won't really help, but only in the, let's say, first stages, in the beginning of the process. Yes, only in order to cause them to sit down and go through a process. Yes, afterwards they have to do it by themselves. So it's only an initial kind of mediation. Okay. Now, what is the main message, would you say, that people that want to sit down and go through this process, what are the values or the message that has to lead them? The message is simple, that if we rise to the level where there really is peace, mutual completion, then we're there. Each leaves his own position, his perception, his opinion, yes, and it's not that he accepts the opinion of the other, but he accepts an opinion in which both of them complete each other. It's not that they're equal and that someone's 25% right and someone's 75% right. No, no such thing. But the completion has to be above the opinion of each of the sides. So another assumption is that don't try to convince each other that you're right. You do not continue standing your position. None of you is right, both of you are wrong, and altogether we're not discussing to what extent is someone right or wrong, but both of you will have to ascend above the current opinion to one opinion, where you exist together as one. So it's a compromise? No, it's not compromise at all. To the contrary, compromise is what's being done today. This isn't compromise, this isn't an agreement. What is it then? Because it's something new, something different. It's simply disconnecting from their previous opinion, from the previous personal opinion of each one of the sides, and coming together, joining in a place where they exist together. And in this together, there's nothing personal left from either of them, but it's a completely new state, where actually there's a common opinion completely. Like, suppose a husband and wife give birth to a baby. So a baby is something new. This is what has to be the fruit of peace. This is called the fruit of peace. Yeah. Okay. Now, previously you mentioned that maybe it's better to acknowledge each other's history, to get to know it. Is it important? No, it's important for us to know only in order to say that all of these approaches did not lead to peace. No. So this is the reason why we learn each other's history, in order to understand that up until now, all the reasons and all the... But as a result of studying history and reaching a state where we don't want to repeat history, there has to be a certain way that we really open up a new way for peace. Yes. And this is something that no one knows, and therefore as a mankind we fail. Even if we have a good desire, even if I'm willing to do anything, what can you recommend? And also the other says, I'm willing to do anything. What can you recommend? And no one has a solution. Why does it fail if there's a good desire on both sides? Because we don't know the way of peace, there's a third path. It's something that's above our own nature, because in the nature of our world, everything happens coercively, by force. And therefore we have to learn something from the upper wisdom to make it happen. Otherwise we'll never achieve peace. To compensate for, to complete opposite conditions, qualities, approaches, philosophies, it's impossible. We don't know what that is. It's something that does not exist in us. Each of us is an egoist, and also the other is, and the third one, and everyone, and there are struggles between all countries, in countries, between parliaments, in the parliaments. Where is there something here that you can bring closer? We can't even come closer to each other. And all the more to reach this concept of peace, which is above our own nature. This is something that We don't know what that is. And therefore, this completion is impossible unless we rise above our nature. Meaning, education for peace has to be education for rising above each and everyone's egoistic nature, where everyone's willing to do it, wants it. We start helping each other in doing it. And people really try to connect in a higher dimension. Okay, so education for peace actually has to be education for rising above the egoistic nature. So if I understand the approach, then each of the sides, without even getting into who's right, who's not, to begin with, each of the sides has an egoistic nature of their own. And if so, then let's say that Nietzsche and I were two sides in a conflict, in an ongoing war or something. Everyone has the way they see things. That stems from who they are. And because we're different, we're in oppositeness and contradiction, opposition. True peace is impossible unless each of us will rise above his own ego. Therefore, he said that education for peace has to be about how to rise from where to where. Everyone above their own nature. Their own nature being what? Egoistic. Egoistic means that a person sees only his own interest. Yeah. It means that consciously or subconsciously, I think only about my own benefit and I can't rise above it or ignore it. And this is the starting point of every side in every conflict and everything. Everyone and everything, still vegetative, animate people in this world, everything. And so education for peace is what? It has to be by inviting the upper force that elevates us above our own nature and gives us the ability to ascend. The upper force being what or who? In nature, in addition to the negative force that controls us, there's also a positive force. Negative being what? Our ego, the desire only to think about ourselves at the expense of others. That does not allow peace. That too. And this leads to struggles, because everyone sees only themselves. Yes. So education for peace demands us to bring a different force against it. Where do you find this force? It exists in nature to the extent to which we want to discover, reveal it. So education for peace is actually, it's what? It's finding what? Education for peace is actually that we do different exercises in order to draw upon ourselves that positive force that's hidden in nature, that's not revealed, because we don't want it. The moment we start wanting it, then it appears and makes different changes in us. And here we have to make different exercises, special exercises. Integrating in such a group that specifically in our times it's very common to be in different kinds of groups. You have that a lot in psychology. There are work groups in psychology. What do you mean? Different such work groups. People that want to acknowledge that there's truly a positive force, then they have to get together and work that way in order to invite that positive force, to draw it by their relationship. And there is a method that draws, invites that positive force, and this is how we can change. If we can summarize everything that we talked about up until now in order to get the stages right. So the first assumption is we are completely different, opposite to each other in order to reach peace. First of all, we have to acknowledge that. Second stage is, don't try to think that it's possible to connect opposites or to convince each other. It's natural that you hate each other because you're different. This is number two. The third assumption is that we can reach completion. It's possible. Yes, but This is something that does not exist in any of us. It does not exist in suppressing each other. This completion exists in detaching from ourselves as we are now and reaching a state that isn't a collective state, but that it's new, where it's not something common. Half of you, half of him, or 30-70, no such thing. It's like a baby that's born, that comes from two people. And we can say, yeah, he has his ears, her eyes, this, that, it doesn't matter. Still, it's a new creature. And you said that this is the way to peace, the third path or way. Yes. And then this is how we have to give birth to a new state. And the fourth assumption, after we understand that there is the third way, and then there's education, meaning a long way, not simple one, where we try, each of us, to disconnect from his current state and to reach a state where we're together without remembering the previous states, but only in order to adhere to that new state where there's no me and no him, but that both of them are as one. And this is something that I can't explain, but there really no one thinks about himself because he himself no longer exists. There is we in a way that it's all one, something new. Okay, and one more thing, you're saying that there is a positive force in nature that connects opposites. Yes, that performs this action. And we actually have to aspire for, we have to invite it. Invite it to do what? To draw its influence over us. To draw the positive force of nature to make peace between us. For it to start working against our ego. And not that it'll erase the ego or decrease it or anything, but that along with our ego, it will turn us into beings that are in bestowal, meaning in giving, in love. Precisely because there is the force of ego, the evil force that exists in us, then the force of good that comes, it envelops our force of evil in such a coating that will exactly know how to behave correctly. Because everyone will include and will consist of the bad force and the good force. What do we need the bad force for? May it disappear and I'll be included only of the force of good. No, then I won't be able to develop. When I reach completion with the other, when we reach peace, then we also have to increase the force of evil and all the time increase the good forces too. Like a baby that's growing up. So, if we're talking about struggle here, struggle isn't something that we have to try and suppress or diminish. It works in the opposite way, in the opposite direction. Now it works in order to increase love and connection. So, if previously this only brought us to war, now the struggle continues, but only now it has a new role. Dr. Leitman, our time is up. Thank you very much. We'll see you on our next show. We had lots of fun. And until next time, thank you, Nitza. Thank you for being with us. All the best.